Uncover the South You Thought You Knew with Salvation South, a podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Chuck Rees, and in each episode, we peel back the layers of Southern culture to reveal untold stories and unheard voices. From gritty Southern literature to the fight for social justice, we explore the complexities that make this region unique. Salvation South offers a fresh, honest look at a rapidly changing landscape. Join us as we reimagine what it means to be Southern in the 21st century. Subscribe to Salvation South at gpb.org/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in this episode. What about the movie?
Oh, the movie. Yeah.
I mean, he was wrapped really tightly. He did not talk about his own emotions.
Okay. I know what you're thinking, because this did cross my mind too. So many stories of predatory college professors who start relationships with young students.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections, hosted by two of your favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB Radio. I'm Peter Biello.
And I'm Orlando Montoya. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own thoughts and ideas on just what gives these works the narrative edge. Okay, Peter, I know you just wrapped up a new book. Tell me all about it.
Okay, it's a book called Norman MacLean, A Life of Letters and Rivers, and it's by Rebecca McCarthy of Athens.
Norman MacLean, A River Runs Through It, right?
Yes, he wrote A River Runs Through It and other stories. It's actually two stories in a novella, and A River Runs Through It is the novella in that collection.
And it became a movie, of course, with Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm. 1992. It was directed by Robert Redford.
So this book by Rebecca McCarthy, now it's a biography of MacLean?
Yes, it's a biography, but with a twist. Rebecca McCarthy knew MacLean when she was a teenager and maintained a friendship with him. So the book starts with her personal impressions of the man she knew and spends a lot of time, I would say most of the time later in the book, recounting who he was. She did a lot of digging into his family history, read a ton of his correspondence with family, friends, and colleagues. She did lots of research on this book, so she calls it a witness biography.
So how did McCarthy meet MacLean?
I spoke with her about how they met, and that full conversation, by the way, is available at gpb.org for anyone interested. We do interview the authors that we feature on this podcast. You can find them all at gpb.org. So here's how Rebecca McCarthy answered that question. She met him in Montana.
I was introduced to him by my brother, my oldest brother, John, in Sealy Lake, where John was working for the Forest Service. He was in charge of recreation on the Sealy Lake Ranger District and had met Norman a couple of years before, because one of John's duties was tending to the people who had leased land from the Forest Service around Sealy Lake. And Norman was one of those summer people who did that.
All right. I have a lot of questions stemming from that, mm-hmm. most of which I probably are not related to what we're going to be talking about at all. But, you know, let's start with maybe what did they do out there and how old were they at the time?
So Rebecca McCarthy was in her late teens, and at the time, Norman was around 70.
Okay.
I know what you're thinking, because this did cross my mind, too. So many stories of predatory college professors who start relationships with young students. He was a professor at the University of Chicago. Rebecca says that kind of impropriety was just incomprehensible to MacLean. MacLean was a beloved professor at the University of Chicago, never any scandals of any kind. And he and Rebecca had a kind of mentorship that consisted of his critiquing her writing, both her poetry and her essays, an experience that she describes as terrifying.
I mean, I just didn't want to disappoint Norman. The paper I wrote for him that he really took me to task on was about a Browning poem. And I should have picked another Victorian poet because
he loved Robert Browning.
He loved Browning, and his parents were in the Browning Society. But he was right. I didn't do the research on the poem, and I didn't make my paper, as he said, something of distinction.
And so this was when she was 19, already in college at the University of Chicago. But he was not her teacher there. He had already retired by then. He taught from 1928 to 1973, but maintained close connections to the university. And the first part of the book, you know, in addition to having that mentor relationship, they would go out together. And there are nice scenes in this book of them walking around Chicago and him pointing out parts of buildings, architecture that he particularly admired.
So getting back to A River Runs Through It, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the thing people care about, right? River Runs Through It.
Was she with him at the time that he was writing that?
Yeah, I mean, she had some awareness that he was working on it. She knew him then. So the story, for those who aren't familiar, it's autobiographical. The main character has a brother named Paul, just like McLean did in real life. And the Paul in the story and in his life, both charming, vibrant, good-looking guys. This is the character played by Brad Pitt in the movie. And both, I'm going to spoil it here, but it's relevant. Both Pauls were killed. The Paul in real life was killed in Chicago. The Paul in the story was killed in Montana. The Paul in the story had a gambling addiction and took some wild risks, and that's why he was killed, whereas the Paul in real life, he did gamble, but it's unclear if he was killed by someone he owed money to or if he was just the target of a random mugging. He was carrying $50, which back in the late 30s was like the equivalent of $900. It's a lot of cash to be carrying around. All of the bones in his right hand were broken, both in the story and in real life, so there was a struggle at the end. And in real life, they never got closure. They never caught the people who did this to Paul. And so it really weighed on the conscience of Norman McLean. He felt sort of responsible for his younger brother. And of course, after he died, his own father kind of started falling apart with grief as well. So it was a really hard thing for him to experience and really hard for him to write about.
Did McCarthy know what he was working on?
She did have a sense that he was working on it.
I believe he read parts of the story to my brother and sister-in-law, which would have been in the early 70s while she was still alive. I know that one time he read me part of it and said, you know, he would just kind of end up and go, well, darling, you know, that's it. I mean, he was wrapped really tightly. He did not talk about his own emotions. Mm-hmm. So, but I do know when he finished, he read it to Jean and Joel, his daughter and son-in-law, and then he could cry for his brother. So I think, I don't know his state of mind, but I think it was a great relief for him to speak publicly about his brother.
And he certainly had plenty of opportunity to speak after the publication of this book because it was a huge hit back then. Did not win the Pulitzer. There was no Pulitzer in fiction that year. But yeah, McLean took a long time to finish whatever he was writing, and he spent years working on other works that he didn't complete. For example, before he wrote autobiographical fiction that we know in A River Runs Through It, he was writing nonfiction about Custer and the Battle of Little Bighorn. He did write a lot about the Mann Gulch fire after he wrote A River Runs Through It, and that's when a dozen fire jumpers died in 1949. The work did see the light of day eventually, but he was something of a perfectionist, so he had high standards for himself, and that kind of slowed him down a bit.
So getting back to A River Runs Through It, what about the movie?
Oh, the movie, yeah. The book discusses the movie a little bit. There were some struggles with the production through the 1980s, which really frustrated McLean. But Robert Redford, who did direct that movie, he assured McLean that he would stay true to the depiction of his family members, and McLean seemed comforted by that. He died in 1990 before the movie came out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So what does McCarthy feel about, you know, this type of obsession about River Runs Through It? I mean, does she want him to be known for more than this?
I didn't get that sense that she had any expectations of whether that was insufficient for his legacy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess the thing is, like, when people are known for one big thing, it all becomes about that big thing, and people like me just ask about it all the time.
I see, yeah. She wanted to stress as well that he was such a good teacher. Like, he was a compassionate teacher. He really made an impression on his students. A lot of them went on to teach themselves, which is, I guess, a testament to how good he was. And I did ask her about, in general, what she wanted people to remember about the man that she knew.
Norman had the capacity for wonder and awe. Like most people, he endured a lot of heartache and terrible things. His brother being murdered and his feeling guilty, his father kind of faltering and failing and dying after that, his wife getting emphysema, his mom dying, the emphysema, you know, whittling her down. And then I think he was, not happy that he was known as a college teacher, not a university scholar. I mean, he was a fabulous teacher and he knew it. But, you know, he created this persona in order to do that. And I think that was hard. He was just, I've never met anybody like him. Nobody.
And so, obviously, a lot to go through in this book. What about the narrative edge?
The question for me when I picked up this book is, okay, so this author knew Norman MacLean, so she's going to write his biography. Why? Like, why write a biography as opposed to just a straight-up memoir about her experience with this historically significant figure? A more cynical way of framing that question is this going to do what good biographies are supposed to do? Are they going to dive deep and use a lot of research to construct who this person was? Or is this simply a way to cash in on a personal relationship?
Nothing wrong with that, by the way.
Nothing wrong with that. Some people do that. And you know, sometimes the historical figure is of such interest that you want to know. You want to know from these people. But I will say that McCarthy interrupted me as I was recording the introduction to the conversation that we had, because I mentioned that it includes her personal experience with the man, even though that's 100% true. She wanted to convey from the outset that it's not just that, that it's a product of rigorous research. So that said, I do think the book holds up as both, as a memoir of personal experience, personal insight into this man, and as a well-researched document. The research is well done, the writing is sharp and clear, and the picture that emerges of MacLean is compassionate and sympathetic. It does draw on interviews and letters and records like any biography, with the added touch of her having known the guy. So I think fans of A River Runs Through It can find some satisfaction here in this book.
Yay! All right. So the book is Norman MacLean, A Life of Letters and Rivers. Peter, thanks for telling me about it.
Happy to.
All right. And before we go, I just want to let you and listeners know about something that Chuck Reese stopped by my desk to tell me about the other day. You know Chuck Reese from our...
He hosts Salvation South here at GPB.
Yeah, hosts Salvation South. Edits the magazine of the same name. He recently put out an episode all about Southern noir, which I think book lovers really will appreciate. So if you're into Southern noir, want to know about it more, find Salvation South wherever you get your podcasts.
Salvation South. Great.
Thanks for listening to Narrative Edge. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. This podcast is a production of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Find us online at gpb.org/narrativeedge.
You can also catch us on the daily GPB news podcast, Georgia Today, for a concise update on the latest news in Georgia. For more on that and all of our podcasts, go to gpb.org/podcasts.